Okay, this is the third class on the financial principles, biblical financial principles, or as that says, Christian financial principles. I've kind of switched over to using the video here. I won't use it a lot today, but I'm going to start getting into that, and then as the class goes on, I'll be using it a whole lot. So in future classes, you might want to sit a little closer to the front, because I'll be doing some things with budgets, and if you are interested in learning not just how to budget, but how to do very effective budgeting, you're going to be able to need to see some things up here. So not necessary today, but I just encourage you to sit up a little closer. Today, what I want to talk about is biblical principles of stewardship. As I mentioned in previous classes, what we're going to do is we're kind of searching the Bible, looking at what God has to say about things, and then actually starting, not next week, but the week after next, I'm going to be going to more practical applications. Now, how do you go about getting out of debt? How do you go about living your life according to God's will? Today is more of a Bible study, so we're doing that first part of it, which is figuring out what it is God has to say about finances. But to start out today, I'd like you to turn to Luke chapter 16. In Luke chapter 16, I want to read, I'm going to read quite a few verses here. Hopefully this is familiar to many of you. But what I'm really wanting to introduce here is the principle of stewardship. So let me read from Luke chapter 16. I'm going to start in verse 1. I think I'll read through verse 13. And he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig, to beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, that they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then said he to the other, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, those verses there, as I mentioned, there's a lot of things we can teach on that. During the missions conference, I believe we heard several of those verses a few times. But what this verse really, or what this passage really brings out, is exactly what is a steward. Okay, and that's what I want to study today. I'm going to study stewardship and what that actually means for the Christian in relation to your finances. It means much more than finances, but I'm just talking about finances today, so it's going to be kind of a limited thing. Just to get us started, as far as the elements of a financial plan, which is where we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to the point of you have a financial plan to live your life according to God's instructions for how to live your financial life. So what I have up here on the overhead here is a really quick outline. And to some of you, I'm sure it seems very intuitive. It seems obvious. You know, I know this already. But as we go through it, just think about if this is how you're treating your finances. Okay. First thing is, as far as a financial plan, you need to start out with prayer. Obviously, you have to ask God to help you understand what He wants you to do. Okay. So first of all, just pray about your finances. Second of all, determine what God says about finances. And that includes the proper attitude towards money and things. That's not God's attitude. That's your attitude towards what God has to say about it. Okay? That's what the first two classes were, as I mentioned to you. I was trying to teach you, one, look, here's the scope of the problem. Here's where the problem is. That was the first class. Is there hope? And the answer was yes, there is hope. The second class was about how finances are a reflection of your relationship with God. And I went through several scriptures last week. And then this week we're going through what I'm going to kind of call the last class on helping you determine what God says about finances. Now, consider your attitudes and outlook towards money and material things. And when I first got into studying Christian financial principles, shortly after I was saved, I had to really stop and spend a lot of time right there because I had a wrong attitude about money. Having not been saved for most of my life, I didn't get saved until I was in my 30s. So when I got saved and started hearing about the financial principles that God has in His Bible, I really started to take notice, hey, you know what, that's not what I grew up learning. That's not what the world has taught me about money. What do you mean I can get out of debt by giving money away? It's kind of a foreign concept. And some of you are looking at me like, woo, what do you mean by that? Well, we'll get to that. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to kind of finish this section of it right here. This is what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. Okay. Next, the part of the financial plan will be determine your financial position. And there's a lot of things you have to do to figure out where you are financially. My guess is, unless some of you have taken the class before, unless some of you are really, really good with your finances and you have budgeting and you have ways of controlling your income and outgo, that you probably don't know exactly what your financial position is today. A lot of us don't. Then you have to establish goals. You have to develop a management plan. Keep praying. And here's the key to this whole thing is, I say start today on this slide. You should have started a couple weeks ago when I started teaching the class. But start praying now that God's going to teach you something, hopefully through this class. The sections there on establishing goals and developing a management plan are the keys to how you practically do it, okay? That's where I'll get to as far as creating budgets, okay? Creating plans, setting goals for what it is you want to do with your money. And I don't want to go too far into these slides because I'm going to talk about this stuff next week. But just to give you a little bit of a preview, before I get into this little study here. Let me just get these up here. Okay. The plan itself, as far as creating a financial plan, all right, you have to have the right attitude, as I already mentioned. And really what you should do is purpose to prove God, as it says here, and as it says in Malachi chapter 3, verse 10. I'll talk more about that a little later on in this class. But determining your position, what I meant by that was you have to figure out, I mentioned that probably a lot of you don't know exactly where you are financially. And what I mean by that is you have to know what God has given you. What is it you own? I don't mean what do you have a loan on. I mean what do you own? That, for example, a car is a good example. A lot of us go out and get car loans. You say, yeah, I own a car. Well, do you? Does the bank own it? Okay. How do you use God's gift? How do you spend your money? Where does it go? How much of your money goes to what God wants you to give it to? How much of it goes to what you want? How much of it goes to what you need? And I break things down. As a matter of fact, when I get into budgeting, you'll see the way I break down a budget. It'll say, from the Lord, here's your income. The next section of the budget is to the Lord. What are you giving to Him? And what are you tithing? Which is what we'll talk about today. Next section of the budget is necessities. What is it you need to have? I mean, we all need to eat. We all need to maybe have transportation to get to jobs, or you have to have a place to live, or there are things that you have to spend money on today. Okay, how do you use those gifts? How do you spend it? The next section of the budget isn't needs. The next or necessities. The next section of the budget that I have in there is desires. And what I'll talk about in weeks to come is the way I want to teach you to budget, it will help you figure out how much of your money is going toward those things. And unless you can sit there today and say, yep, I spend, you know, 15% of my money on my housing, I spend, then you don't know where you are financially, okay? Not everybody needs to get into that kind of depth as far as their budgeting. But it's a great exercise at least once. And I'll be teaching you why I do it that way and the things that it does for you in a few more weeks. Creating a written budget is part of that, and then adjusting your habits and living in budget is why you have to have your attitude right. Because as soon as you say, well, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to create a written budget, and I'm going to start living that way. If your attitude's not right, if you haven't purposed to prove God and what he's promised to do for you, you're just going to go right back to your old ways. I always use the analogy of dieting. It's like dieting. If anybody's ever dieted, and I've done it before, not recently, but when you diet, what do you have to do? You have to have a discipline about it. You have to stick with it. You can't just, well, I'll diet for a little while and then fall off your diet and expect it to work. Well, you have to stick with it. You have to adjust your habits, okay? Budgeting is a lot like dieting, as unpleasant as that can be, okay? Now, the section in Luke 16, just a couple comments I wanted to make about that. We read that. Hopefully you're all familiar with those verses about making friends of the mammon of unrighteousness and not being able to serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. Hopefully you're familiar with those things enough. I mean, I talked about those, I think, last week. But one of the things that's in here is this whole idea of a steward. And what is a steward? I mean, so you say, okay, I know what a steward is. Well, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, or maybe you do, maybe you don't, but have you ever studied it in God's Word to find out how it's used in the Bible? What does that mean? Now, we don't have time to go really in-depth into that, but I will describe it to you as I go along today. But basically, what it comes down to is that a steward, and what this passage is teaching, is that there was a steward that was unjust, that was essentially fired by his master. Okay. But the point I want to get to is what's in the first verse there in chapter 16, is that there, where it says, and he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. Okay, in that particular case, the steward had wasted his master's goods. And what therefore has to have happened before that for him to waste it? He must have had control of those goods in one way or another. Okay, that's all I want you to get out of that right now. Okay, we'll talk more about it. To get into this, probably the best way is for me to give you this little handout. Just pass those around. Here. This is a little Bible study. Pass them around if you would, David. This is a little Bible study about stewardship itself. And stewardship really comes in a couple different parts. But to understand really what a steward does, you have to back up even further. Okay. This is just a copy of what you're getting in your handout up here. It's going to help me follow along. But before we go to the point of saying, okay, well, a steward is somebody that is in control of somebody else's goods, as it says in this passage in Luke, I want to go one more step backward, if you will, away from the subject, and start out with what it says on the top of your sheet. Hopefully you all have them by now. Thank you, David. Where the first foundation, there's four foundations that I want to start with as far as stewardship. And the first one is that, number one, everything belongs to God. This is where it takes an attitude adjustment. What you have is not yours. You've been bought with a price, assuming you're saved. Everything you have is God's. Okay? And just I'm not going to turn to these scriptures, but Psalm 24:1, and you can just fill in the blanks. I put those there because this isn't the most exciting subject, and maybe filling in blanks will keep you awake. Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's. That's the fill in there, is the Lord's. Haggai 2:8 says, the silver is mine and the gold. Exodus 19:5 says, "For all the earth is mine." So God made it pretty clear, certainly in the Old Testament, that he owns it all. Okay. So, okay, God owns it. Foundation number two, I mentioned already, what is a steward? A steward is the manager of the affairs of another. Now turn to Genesis 39, if you would. And we'll read a little story that's very familiar, I would expect, about Joseph. Genesis 39, verse 1 says, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house. And all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he did, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored." Okay, go back to the little study notes you got here. Just ask some very simple, basic questions. Letter A here, who was the master of the story? Well, in this story, it was a man named Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. That's in verse 1 there, in chapter 39. Who is the servant of the story? Well, the very first part of that verse 1 says, "And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and that this man Potiphar bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites." And if you follow these verses down, what you find out is that Joseph became his servant. And then, as he gained favor with Potiphar, he was made, it says in verse 4, he made him overseer over all his house. Okay? So the servant in the story was Joseph. Now the next section, according to verse 4, what was Joseph made? I just mentioned that. He was made overseer of his house. Indeed, according to verse 4, what was put into Joseph's hand? It says he was made overseer of all his house, and all that he had, he put into his hand. Okay, so that's just an example in the Bible of what stewardship is. Stewardship is the management of the affairs of another. In this case, Joseph was made a steward of what Potiphar owned. Okay. So number one, we know everything belongs to God. Number two, stewardship is the management of the affairs of another. And the third foundation is that every Christian is a steward. Turn to Matthew 25 quickly. Matthew 25 and verse 14 and 15, I think I'll read. "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey." Again, this is just another example of stewardship. These men became stewards, the ones that were given these talents. Okay. But what I want you to notice is not that they were given talents, but the very first statement that Christ made here in verse 14, "For the kingdom of heaven is as." Okay. It's a spiritual application. Again, this is one of these things where Christ was using money as an example to teach a spiritual application. The kingdom of heaven, obviously, it is a spiritual subject, okay? And each of the people that become children of God, those that are saved, become stewards of that which God has. So every Christian is a steward. As it says there, the note to fill in there is, "To whom did the Lord trust his wealth?" And the answer is his servants. Okay. So going back to, we know everything belongs to God. We know that stewardship is the management of the affairs of another. We know that every Christian is a steward. And then we know from 1 Corinthians 4:2, it is required of stewards that they be faithful. Okay. So I know I'm just kind of going fast. I'm just kind of touching on this. But I think probably most of you in the room understand the concept anyway. But that's the point, is that as far as financial principles go, we are supposed to be stewards of everything that God has. And that's everything. It's all His. The things that He allows you to have, your income, your house, your car, your family. I mean, there's lots of other things other than just financial things. But anything, it does include anything material or financial. They're all God's. He's given them to you. You're a steward of them. You're required to be faithful with it. Faithful to what? Well, faithful to what God says you're supposed to do with it. Okay? Proverbs 3, you can turn there if you want, but I'm just going to read this quickly. Proverbs 3, verses 9 through 10 says, "Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine." Well, okay, one of the things we know we're supposed to do is honor the Lord with our substance and with our first fruits. Now I'm going to talk about tithing, okay? Sometimes I know it can be an unpopular subject, but I'll tell you what, it's been a real blessing to me doing it. When I first got saved, I had never even heard of tithing. I didn't know what it was. And maybe some of you sitting here don't know what it is either. I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I'm going to tell you what it is here. But when I first got saved, I think I gave you some of my testimony telling you that I was in some pretty deep debt at that point. I had a good job, lots of income to pay my loans, but basically I had lots and lots and lots of debt. Okay. And then when I got saved, the pastor that was teaching on financial principles taught a message very similar to this, and where he told me that, look, if you're not tithing, you're robbing from God. And I said, well, what's tithing? How am I supposed to do that? And so I went and asked him. And that pastor said, oh, well, you're supposed to give, and it's not giving, you owe God 10% of your income. I was like, wait a minute. There's no way I'm going to be able to give God 10% of my income. Okay, well, in several short months, God taught me very quickly that, you know what, there's no way I can't give God 10% of my income. Because He fixed, as soon as I started following the principles that God had to teach me about finances, and that included first tithing, as soon as He impressed that on my heart, I started doing it by faith, trying to take God's promises and claim them for myself, as soon as I started doing that, I couldn't explain it, but things started working out. And very quickly, I got out of that debt. My life started working out fine. By the way, my income didn't change. But I was able to pay off my debts. Some of them took me several years to pay off. But I did it. And that was just by following God's principles here. So, as I mentioned I said we're supposed to honor the Lord with thy substance and with thy first fruits, okay? The Bible also says in Malachi 3:10, which I've already mentioned, but let me read the verse. It says, "Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there should not be room enough to receive it." So do you see the promise there? When He says, "Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse," and He says, "Prove me now herewith," and He says, "Prove me if I will not open you the windows of heaven." So what I mentioned a little earlier about what do you mean you can get out of debt by giving God 10% of your income? You can. I know it doesn't make sense to us, but the Lord very clearly tells us what tithing is and tells us that we're supposed to tithe. If you look at the next section of those notes, there's a section there called Stewardship of Our Treasure. Excuse me, I'm going to grab this clock so I don't have a watch. So Yeah, 10 minutes left. Okay. Well, what is a tithe? Okay, there's several scriptures. I only wrote a couple of them down there. And I'm not going to have time to go through all of these scriptures with you. And I want to review this very quickly. But what is a tithe? Essentially, a tithe, and by the way, before I even say, I want to read a couple things out of this. Even if you are a tither, maybe you're not, maybe you've never heard of tithing, maybe you're like I was, there's this pamphlet right out on the rack out there in the entry area. And maybe you've seen it. It says how to make things easy on yourself, or how to make, that's not how to make things, how to make tithing easy on yourself. But the remarkable thing about it is that it says right here, for the people of Faith Bible Baptist Church. This isn't a tract to pass out to other people. This is for us. This is based on a sermon that our pastor taught us about tithing not too long ago. And he started off that sermon by saying this, that the biblical practice of tithing is usually a shock to someone when they first hear of it. That was me. Tithing is when a person presents to the Lord 10% of their gross income on a weekly basis or whenever they're paid as a way of honoring him. Those who tithe to the Lord do not believe that 10% is theirs, but rather that it belongs to God. It is a divine tax imposed on us by the Lord for the maintenance of his work, the local church, world evangelism, through missions, etc. Okay. I've already read to you Proverbs 9:3, and I want to go back to this study sheet here in just a second. But it says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. It says I'm going to read you a couple of other quick verses here. It says in Genesis 28:22, and this stone which I have set for a pillar, now this is Jacob talking about his dream, and this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. That's Jacob promising God that he's going to give him a tenth of all the increase that he gives him. In Leviticus 27, go the right direction here. Leviticus 27 and verses 30 and 31. This was an interesting thing that I ran across. Now, this is the law, okay? And it says here, and all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. In verse 31, and if a man will at all redeem aught of this tithe, of his tithes, he shall add therefore the fifth part thereof. What was interesting about that, I mean, what I'm trying to do by giving you a couple of these verses, like I said, out of Genesis, out of Leviticus, there's some verses there, another one out of Genesis, another one out of Hebrews, that basically are the verses that teach you that a tithe is 10%. That's what it means, okay? These verses also, if you go through them, talk about all thine increase, okay, of all that you have, of all that I have, as Jacob said there, okay? It's 10%. There's a study here that I'm not going to be able to spend a lot of time doing, but where you study it out and you find out that it is supposed to be, as you are increased, as the Lord blesses you, anything that you're increased with, that would mean your paycheck, okay? That would mean money you earn doing whatever you do. That increase, you're supposed to give 10% of it, that's the tithe, to God. And that's the answer to A there. What is a tithe? It's 10%. I'm going to have to move a little quicker here. I'm not going to make it. Okay, B, is the practice of tithing for New Testament Christians? I've had this discussion with several people about tithing. Oh, well, that's the Old Testament. That's the law. Well, remember what Pastor taught us about, yeah, we're not under the law, but we're still supposed to fulfill the righteousness of the law. God had a certain way that he wanted, he expected his people to do things. And this includes tithing. And you can see that in several of these verses. Again, I don't have time to go and read these. I am going to read the ones in 1 Corinthians really quickly. 1 Corinthians 9:14. 1 Corinthians 9:14. Actually, I want to start back in 13. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. There's just an example. Now, again, this is Paul writing his letter to the church at Corinth. And he's telling them, look, don't you know that those which minister about holy things are supposed to live of the things of the temple, or the church in our case, right? They're supposed to live of them. People like Pastor Cole and his family. Well, some of his kids are older now, but his wife, anyway. Pastor Seth and his family. Brother Frank and his family. Rebecca and Lori work here. Brother Jim Evans that work here. Their income is here. Guess where that income comes from? We're an independent church. That we don't have a denomination that's sending us money. What we have is the biblical concept of tithing. So if you're not tithing, you're not paying all these people that work here. You're just using their services. And I mentioned this article that Pastor Cole had written up here. I suggest you all grab a copy and read it. Maybe you heard the sermon. But let me very quickly read some things, and then I'm going to have to zip through the rest. But that's what your tithes pay for. That's the income source of this church. According to the way that God has us to give through the tithe, and there's other things that I'll get to in just a second. That's what the tithe is supposed to be used for, as it says here in 1 Corinthians. But it says here in Pastor's article, first you come to the church and park your car in a parking lot that you helped to buy or rent. If you're not a tither, you didn't do that. Then you walk into a building that you helped to buy, it's your building. As you walk in, you enjoy the warmth of the heat during the summer and the coolness of the air conditioning during this during the heat during the winter and the coolness of the air conditioning during the summer. Your money purchased these things. But this article really goes on. This gives you one of those attitude adjustments as far as all the things that the tithe of the church pays for. And that's why it's entitled How to Make Tithing Easy on Yourself. Once you read through all the things that the tithe does, it's really not so hard. We should be able to do it on faith anyways because God said it. But some of us struggled with that. I certainly did. But if you can't get past that, if your faith isn't that strong yet, read that and find out what the money's for. And maybe that'll help you to become a tither if you're not. Okay, I want to go very quickly down through this. I'm just going to give you the answers real quick. The scriptures are written there. How should Christians practice tithing? Well, in 1 Corinthians 16:2, it basically says that we're supposed to bring our tithe into the storehouse. Okay, we're supposed to bring it here to the church. So that's the answer to D. Where should a Christian place his tithe? That's in the church. One of the things that I want to make as a point here, because I know Christians that I believe have this wrong. Their idea isn't really scriptural. They tithe, they say, but they don't bring it to the church. They say, oh, well, I give it to such and such a soup kitchen. That's not what the tithe is for. That's why I was telling you what the tithe is for and why you should read this article by Pastor Cole. Because what the tithe is for is to help support the ministries of this church and to go out and help in the effort for world evangelism. That's what the tithe is for. So how should a Christian practice tithing? You should give your money here through the church, at the church, and then I don't have time. But why are we to place our tithe into the church? Well, the short answer is that's what God said to do. Okay, the verses are there. What does God call us if we refuse to tithe? In Malachi 3:8, he calls us a robber of God if we refuse to tithe. What is the promise God gives to those who faithfully tithe? Well, I already read that in Malachi, that he will pour us, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Okay, that's about tithing. That's what that verse is about. And whose is the tithe? Well, in Leviticus it tells us it's the Lord's. And how can I please my Lord when tithing? There's verses there that will tell you that. I don't have time to get into I wish I did. These classes are always too short. You can do it by tithing 10% of your gross. Okay, Some people want to argue it's not gross, it's net. Some people want to argue, well, I have this income, but it's not from my job, so it's not really. Look, it's all God's. And the position that I take as far as tithing is, if there's a question, tithe anyway. Because I realize I can be wrong. Okay. So if I have any source of income, as a matter of fact, Pastor Cole very recently talked about one of the hard questions was about whether or not you need to tithe on a gift that you receive. And I believe his answer was that you didn't need to. Because sometimes gifts aren't monetary. There's something I can't, if somebody gives me a car, I can't tear 10% of it off and bring it in here. It wouldn't be very useful to anybody. That being said, notice what he did say, which is if somebody gives him money, he tithes on it. I'll do the same thing. Because I think that that's not, I mean, if you read the scriptures, it talks about all thine increase. Okay, there's things you can't tithe on. I realize that. But the verse that I read in Leviticus talked about if any man, and I forget the words exactly, but it says if any man uses essentially part of the tithe that's owed to God, for example, cattle or grain back then he was able to convert it to cash, to money, but he had to add 20% to it. That's what that verse in Leviticus said. It's an interesting concept. So as far as whether or not you tithe on a gift, well, I believe you can live by your pastor's faith. I believe he studied it out. He certainly knows the Bible better than I do. But he said himself that if he's given a gift, he tithes on it. I would rather err to that side myself. So hopefully you would too. In the 1 minute that I have left, very quickly, I want to talk about offerings. Malachi 3:8 speaks of tithes and offerings. Tithing requires an obedient heart, but giving requires a willing heart, according to Exodus 35:5. And if you study the book of Ezra, the Bible refers to offerings as free will offerings. This is different than the tithe. The tithe is required by God. Offerings are not required by God. According to 2 Corinthians 8:5, the people in the churches of Macedonia first gave themselves to the Lord. And according to 2 Corinthians 9:7, what kind of giver does God love? He loves a cheerful giver. If we tithe and also give offerings, will the Lord allow us to suffer and go without necessities of life? Well, no. Those promises are in the Bible. And then the last thing that I want to say about offerings, and maybe I'll pick this up here next time, is that offerings, I was talking to some of the men actually before the prayer meeting this morning, and one of them mentioned that they didn't realize this. The offerings, there's tithing and there's offerings, but there's three different kinds of offerings that are talked about in the Bible. There's free will offerings, which I mentioned up there, which are given of your prosperity, by the way. You have some extra that the Lord's given you? He probably wants you to use that for somebody else. But it's given of your prosperity. You can afford it. You know, it fits in your budget. There's almsgiving, also fits in your budget. That's giving to the poor, and that's not usually done through the church finances. That's done privately. Okay. And then there's faith promise giving, which is given by faith. Huge difference between free will offerings, given of your abundance, and faith promise missions giving, faith promise giving, which is given out of your faith. So hopefully you all, as we go through this stewardship month, as we have these missions cards here, and you're praying and asking God to give you a number, and Pastor made it pretty clear, what this is all about isn't how much can you afford. That's not what this is. This is all about praying, asking God to give you a number that he's going to give you, that you're just on faith going to say, I'm going to promise it, and then when the Lord gives it to me, I'm going to give it. Different. Three kinds of offerings. Okay. Sorry, that was kind of fast and disjointed, but let's pray. Lord, I just pray that today, Lord, you just help us all to understand this concept of tithing, Lord, of giving offerings. Lord, I know I didn't even do it close to justice today, Lord, but I just pray that you'd work on everybody's hearts, Lord. Help them to follow your will, Lord, for tithing, Lord, for giving. Lord, I pray that you'd set on everyone's heart here, Lord, an amount they might give for the Faith Promise missions. Lord, I just pray that we'd have 100% participation, Lord. I just pray that everybody would pray and ask you for something, Lord, and you'd honor that, Lord, and give them the money that they'd be faithful to give it. Lord, I just pray, too, that we would have a church of tithers, Lord, those that question. Lord, I just pray that they might seek answers, Lord, and find them in your word. And I just pray, Lord, that, again, as we continue on in weeks to come, Lord, that I can help others to get out of debt. Lord, I pray that you'd use me that way. Lord, and I just ask that you'd help us all to learn something about our finances, help us to become more faithful in that area of our life. Lord, we thank you for it and ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.